I had heard that Sylvester Stallone had become a Christian a few months ago, and I treated it with all the other internet sort of gossip and rumours you hear, and, well, there you go. And to hear his story, and one of the things that I was mindful of is when these guys live their lives out in public, don't they? You know, the drugs, the sex, the parties, the whole thing out of control. How would you have responded if you'd met Sylvester Stallone when he was at bottom? As a Christian, how would you? And I hope that we can learn some lessons here, that sometimes God's got to take people through some stuff in order to bring them to a place. And perhaps you're going through some stuff right now. Perhaps your life feels like it's out of control as well. And perhaps for you, Christianity is one of those things where you would never even consider Christianity because you've been told Christians believe a whole bunch of things. And I want to answer that because I want to answer this question. What do Christians believe? In fact, what do Christians really believe? Because if you believe the media, we apparently believe only a few things. And yesterday I was mindful of the opposition leader, Bill Shorten, making some, what I would consider to be some audacious claims about Christianity. And it really just shows me, again, it just highlights how many people really do not understand what Christianity is all about. And this is remarkable because we are in supposedly a Christian country. So if I was to ask you, what are the top things that Christians believe? And I'm just going to pick five. On our website, we list the top 13 things that we as Christians believe. And I've got a little video on each one of those, just a little video vignette where you can just watch a 30-second, 60-second video of myself just talking about each of those issues. So we list 13. I want to give you the top five that I consider to be what Christians believe. One of the things that will surprise, I think, most people is just how united Christians are about these issues. We are sometimes presented as all the different denominations and factions as if we are at each other's throats and we disagree and we're always fighting and squabbling. Now, I got to tell you, as a pastor of a church, that is not my story. I get on really, really well with Pentecostals, with Presbyterians, Anglicans, even Baptists. I get on really well with these people. So here's if you were to ask people, and this is, as I prepared this, it was after I'd prepared this that Bill Shorten yesterday came out with his comments about Christianity. And all it does is confirms exactly what I'd put in here. Because this, if you were to ask people, what do Christians believe? Here's the answers you're going to get. Christians believe that they hate gays. In fact, the answer is, you can see how that sentence doesn't flow. Christians believe they hate gays. In fact, what I'm going to point out is that when you ask this question, what do Christians believe, none of these answers that I'm going to give you that are taken from surveys and so on are actually anything to do with our beliefs. But we'll put that aside for the moment. So most people, when it comes to Christianity, they would think Christians hate gays. That's what Christianity is all about, hating gays. What else? Christians are against a woman's right to choose what she does with her own body. You ever heard that one? You hear that a lot, and you certainly hear it a lot in the media. Christians ignore science, facts, and evidence. Instead, they hold to medieval, superstitious beliefs. This was one promoted very recently by some very prominent atheists who have promoted that idea as well. And it's getting traction. And Christians arrogantly believe that they are right and that everyone else will go to hell because they didn't believe as them, as they do. So here's one more. Christians believe that only those who go to church will get to heaven. Now that's a reflection of some of the views that you will hear expressed by people. This is a couple of quotes here that are very disturbing from public figures, very public figures. One, not so well known in Australia, Andrea Codrescu. He's on National Public Radio in America on a program called All Things Considered. You can see it on SBS as well. He said this, and I won't use his language because I don't use language like this, and if I overhear my children using language like this, they will be reprimanded, so I will replace one of his words. The evaporation of 4 million who believe in this rubbish, that is, Christ's return, would leave the world a better place. This is a leading media commentator in America saying, in response to the movie about Left Behind that's just come out in America, starring Nicolas Cage, the idea that a whole bunch of Christians, millions of Christians across America are going to be raptured. He said, good riddance, the world will be better without Christians. Friedrich Nietzsche, he lived in the 19th century. He lived from 1850 to 1899. He was a German philosopher, exceptionally influential. He said this, after coming in contact with a religious man, and he's thinking a Christian, I always feel that I must wash my hands. So you can, the level of animosity toward Christians is amazing. Well, here's something that's becoming very obvious to me. Christians are better known for what they are against than what we actually believe. None of those things that I stated before are actually a belief. They're just an opinion. And these are people's opinions about Christianity. They don't reflect any of our beliefs. Beliefs, by the way, there is a jargon word for it. Let me give you that jargon word. I'm going to try and avoid the jargon. But the jargon word is doctrine. To have a belief is to have a doctrine, which is a teaching and the reason for that teaching. So if you were asked, what are the top five things Christians believe? And I will sometimes say to people, you know, the whole issue of that you've raised, homosexuality and abortion and so on, they are important to Christians, but they are not even top 10 issues for us. They are not top 10 issues. If you hear me say they're not important to us, you're not hearing me. I'm saying there are issues far more important. And let me go through the top five. And then I'm going to hopefully suggest to you that if you understand these top five, it will change the way you view your criticism of Christianity. So, the top five beliefs that Christians have, and I want to share these beliefs with you. And I want you to be able to share these with others as well, if they ask you, what is it that Christians believe? And hopefully, as a Christian, you're going to go, duh. In other words, you're going to go, well, of course we believe that. And if you don't, and if you go, oh, I didn't know we believe that, then we've got a problem. So let's hope we don't have any problems with these. Number five, and we're counting down from five to one. Number five is God. And it's number five, and as I was sharing this with Ruby this morning on the couch, my eight-year-old daughter, she said, Daddy, shouldn't that be number one? Well, I said, well, it kind of is number one. It's where we start, but we're counting down, and this is our foundation. So if you can think of it in terms of building a pyramid, this is the foundation of it, God. Now, that might surprise you that we would even bother to say that, but it does come in the light of a pretty bizarre concept that there are people now who profess to be Christians and they don't even believe there is a God. And hopefully your reaction, immediate reaction to that is, what? Is you know, commendable. Because I do remember seeing a response from an Anglican bishop who came out as an atheist and continued to remain as an ordained Anglican bishop. Well, someone satirically wrote a letter in response to this, mocked up as an article, and it was supposedly coming from this bishop's assistant, and it said, you know, now that we know there is no such thing as God, it does make pressing on as a church somewhat difficult, but press on we shall. And you just think, if you've got no God, you've got no point. So we start number five. The number five belief we have is not about gays or homosexuals or lesbians or any of that stuff. It's that we believe there's God. And I could tell you a lot about God, and I hope if someone says to you, well, what kind of God do you believe in? I hope you use words like this, infinitely, limitlessly, powerful and loving. I hope you use words like that. I hope that when you convey that he is infinitely, limitlessly powerful and loving, that you also put in another word and throw the adjectives limitless and infinite in there as well. He is good. God is good. He is infinitely good. And he only ever does what is good and right. And if they come back at you and say, well, what about evil in the world? I go, do you think God might have a good purpose for what you consider to be evil? I'm not asking if you would have a good purpose for it. Do you think God might have a good purpose for what you consider to be evil? And the answer is yes, because the ultimate act of evil, God had a very good purpose for. And the ultimate act of evil we were singing about this morning, Jesus Christ dying, it was an act of evil committed by evil men, but God had a good purpose for it. So we start with God. God is good. The opening words of the Bible, I think, are profound. And in a moment, I'm going to suggest to you, if you want to start a journey as a Christian, I'm going to suggest don't start at Genesis 1:1. Start at John 1:1, which is kind of a recap of all the Bible and brings you up to speed about Jesus. But the opening words of Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God. The Bible doesn't ramp up. It doesn't present the apologetic case for God. It just establishes God as a fact. In the beginning, God. And so Christians, we start with God. He is a good, infinitely loving God. And to be loving means you are going beyond yourself. I heard a quote this week and I thought it just captures what love is. And the comment was this: true love is humble. True love is humble. And we have a picture of humble that says this. Some people think humble is when you think less of yourself. But that's not humility. True humility is not thinking less of yourself. True humility is thinking less about yourself. Stop thinking about yourself all the time. That's humility. Start to think about others. And if true love is humble, that means God has always loved. And that's why we as Christians hold to Father, Son, and Holy Spirit being eternal. What's the number four thing? Number four is that we believe in the Bible. This book here, the Bible, 66 books, 39 books of the Old Testament, 27 books of the New Testament. We believe it's inspired by God. We believe that God moved men and he used their vocabulary, their experiences. God used their way of expressing things and he was able to convey his truth through these men, some 40 men over a 2,000 year period spread on about five continents, and they all agree. That in itself is remarkable, and it points to an author behind the people that penned the Bible. So Christians believe in the Bible. Absolutely we do. We believe that the New Testament has replaced the Old Testament. Does that mean there's no value in the Old Testament? Not at all. It means that the Old Testament pointed to the New Testament, and the New Testament is all about Jesus. Does that mean that we take a random Old Testament verse where it talks about perhaps going to war and killing people because they don't obey the laws of God? No. Unless we can find support for it in the New Testament, we don't do that. And so that would answer a lot of critics of the Bible who generally quote out of the Old Testament when trying to make the Bible sound foolish. Even then, we could argue that they don't quite understand its purpose either. What's the third thing? So fifth was God, fourth was the Bible. Third is this: Christians believe in the uniqueness of man. The uniqueness of man. We are not like the animals. We are not like the insects. These things, by the way, are the opening ideas presented in Genesis 1. In the beginning, God spoke, there's his word, and then God created man, and where he created everything else and said it's good, when he created man, he said, very good. Mankind is unique. And if you get that mankind is unique and that your life started not when you came out of the birth canal, but the moment you were conceived, and you're a special and unique creation, it means that every person has what's called an inherent dignity. No matter what their size, no matter what their location, no matter what their environment, and no matter what their dependency is. So, for example, you might be short, you're still a human. You might be 5 millimeters long in your mother's womb, you're a human. You might be 5 foot long and in a nursing home, gasping for your last breath, you are still a person of worth. We believe in the uniqueness of man, but we also believe this, that not only is mankind unique and special, that mankind has fallen into sin. Mankind has fallen into sin. This again is part of the opening 3 chapters of the Bible itself, and time prevents me from doing an in-depth Bible study with you, because I want you to get this so that as you're over a 10-minute coffee break with someone, you could share this as well. We believe that mankind is both special but fallen. Mankind was created perfect, but like a perfect vase that was made, it's been marred. Mankind has been marred with the stain of sin. What's the second thing? So we've gone God, the Bible, mankind. Here's the second thing. Christians believe in Jesus. And if we had the time, we would just love to go on to explain why we think Jesus is like none other. Jesus is not one of the many options in a supermarket of religions. Jesus described his life and his mission as the only way to find peace with God. He said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life," John 14, verse 6. "No one comes to the Father but by me." That's an audacious claim. If it's false, it's exceptionally liberating. If it's true, Jesus Christ lived, died, rose again from the dead, ascended back to the Father, and will one day return. When Jesus Christ was born in Bethlehem, and in just, 54 days we celebrate Christmas. Isn't that exciting? 54 days. You're probably all now wondering what to get me for Christmas, aren't you? In a matter of days, we celebrate Christmas, and we celebrate the eternal Son of God, the one who has always been, who became man. He didn't become a person, as some teach, when he was born in Bethlehem. He was always the Son of God, and God the Father has always been the eternal Father. So Jesus, unique. And if you can't remember any of the five, just remember Jesus. And put this challenge out to people. How was Jesus not unique? Because we can certainly show that he was unique. He had a miraculous birth. That was unique. He lived a miraculous life. That was unique. He died on a Roman cross. That wasn't unique. But he rose again 3 days later. That was unique. And he ascended into heaven. That was unique. Jesus Christ is often claimed as having endorsed certain things because he never spoke against them. That is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my life. I'll tell you why, and you'll see people who take up some of these accusations about Christianity and say, "Your Jesus doesn't even support your views on homosexuality or abortion or whatever it is." That is so stupid. And I'll tell you why. Because if you're going to say that Jesus endorsed everything he didn't explicitly mention as being against, what are you going to do with date rape? What are you going to do with infanticide, genocide? What are you going to do with rape? Jesus didn't mention those things either. Are you telling me, seriously telling me, Jesus endorsed those things? That is utterly absurd. And when Jesus said, "You shall not murder," he's clearly talking about rape and things like that, and when Jesus says you shall not commit sexual immorality, everyone in his audience knew exactly what he meant. And the Jews had six categories of sexual sin, one of which was homosexuality. And Jesus endorsed that sexual immorality was wrong. And we could look at that and think, well, maybe you're interpreting that wrong. And as Christians, we go, the Bible is actually so much clearer than you give it credit for. You actually need a lot of help to misunderstand the Bible. If you read it, you can get it. And so Jesus only ever said anything that was for our good. He only ever said anything that was for our good. All right, here's the number one thing that Christians believe, and it's eternity. Is it Arthur Stace? Is that the man? Who was a homeless man in Sydney who walked past the open door of a church one night and heard an American evangelist, a preacher, sharing about the love of God through Jesus Christ, how God so loved the world that he sent Jesus Christ to this world to show the world how much he loved and cared for the world. And it was Arthur Stace who outside on the pavement, outside of that church door, heard for the first time that someone loved him. And he was so gripped by the American preacher's words about all eternity, God will love you. He wants to save you for all eternity. And that word eternity rang in his ears. And so with that ringing in his ears, he prayed a prayer to God and surrendered his life to Jesus. He gave his life to Jesus. And in a heart of gratitude, he went around Sydney with a piece of chalk. And he wrote the word, the one word that gripped him and changed his life. He wrote the word eternity in perfect copper plate writing. And of course, when the Sydney Olympics was opened in 2000 across the Sydney Harbour Bridge, eternity. And I looked at that and I thought, oh, if only people realised what Arthur Stace was trying to say. Consider eternity. Your life does not end at the grave. I've had people say to me, I don't want to become a Christian just so I can go to heaven. I don't want to just have a spiritual fire insurance. I'm thinking if that's the only reason you become a Christian, that's not a bad one. Because for eternity, you will be where you will be. And there is no way to change your eternal destiny. So top five things that Christians believe. And this is number one. When you leave this planet, when you leave this life, you will go somewhere for eternity. And you will either be with God enjoying infinite pleasure. Let me repeat that. Infinite pleasure. And the psalmist described infinite pleasure as pleasures forevermore. That sounds like infinite pleasure. That when we leave this life and we go to be with God, if we have been reconciled to him, we will enjoy pleasures forevermore. Wow. But if you won't be reconciled to God, you will be banished from the source of infinite pleasure for eternity. And the Bible has a word to describe that state of being, and it's called hell. I can't think of a more apt word. So here is the invitation. Knowing that Christianity is about God, the Bible, who you are, the uniqueness of man, knowing that Christianity is about Jesus Christ, knowing that Christianity is about eternal matters, the question is, what will you do? And maybe you're asking this question. How do I become a Christian? How do you become a Christian? Here's what the Bible itself teaches. Acknowledge your need for forgiveness from God. Acknowledge your need for forgiveness from God. It's as simple as saying this in your heart and mind. God, I have, here's the jargon word, I've sinned. I am guilty of doing wrong, and I need your forgiveness. Ask. Ask God by accepting Jesus Christ as the means of your forgiveness. You see, it's like God, if you were to stand before God on the day of judgment and he was to list off everything you've ever done wrong, and there it is, there's your rap sheet, and you're guilty as charged. And before he brings down his gavel and as the judge of your soul, and before he mentions the word hell for eternity, Jesus comes over and he takes your rap sheet, and Jesus says, "Can I take your rap sheet? I'll take it, and I'll die for it for eternity. I'll pay your price." And he pulls out of here another document, and it's his passport. And he gives you his passport into heaven, and he says, "With this, you enjoy everything that's mine for eternity in heaven." What'll it be? You want to give me your rap sheet and I'll give you my identity, my passport? That's what Jesus is offering. He's offering eternal life. And the question is, will you accept it? Will you accept that Jesus Christ has paid the price for your sin? Because that is exactly what he did the very first Easter. By asking Jesus Christ to come and be the means of your forgiveness, you're asking him to reconcile you to God. And this is what you'll discover. That when you come to know God, it's not about being religious. It's about coming into a relationship with a God that you can talk to, you can share your cares with, you can share your burdens with. It's coming into a relationship with a God when you are desperately lonely, he can be the friend that will never forsake you. And then, what do you do after you've invited Jesus Christ to forgive you of your sin and reconcile you to God? I'm glad you asked. Those five things that we see Christians believe, you can be informed of those by getting a Bible or a Bible app. I'm going to have to start saying that now. A Bible or a Bible app. If you haven't got a Bible and you're here today, I've got some. In fact, I've got 60 Bibles in my office that I bought to give away. I've got about 40-something left now. I'd love to give you a Bible. I bought them to give to you. If you want a Bible, if you know someone who would like a Bible, come and see me. I'll give you a Bible. I've got Bibles to give away. And as you do that, I would suggest this. Start with the Gospel of John. It's the fourth book in the New Testament. And then I'm going to suggest read the next two after it. Read Acts and then read Romans. That will get you started. What do you do? Number one, get a Bible and start at the Gospel of John. Number two, get into a caring church and join a small group. Get into a caring church and join a small group. Why? Because it's there that you're going to be cared for. It's there that you're going to learn more about Christ and his word and what God can do in your life. And then thirdly, tell someone what you've done and how Jesus has changed you. Let this become a contagious thing, giving your life to Jesus. And number four, get water baptized. Because when you get water baptized, it's a picture of Jesus. Jesus was crucified on the cross. He died. He was buried in the waters and he came up alive, resurrected alive. And that's what water baptism is a picture of. You say, "I'm not going to live the way I've been living. I die to that way of living and I come up now as a brand new person." That's the picture of water baptism. And it's done before witnesses because it's saying to the whole world, "I want you all to know, I now live for Jesus. I now live for Jesus." And maybe this week someone's going to ask you, what is it that you believe as a Christian? What is it? And I hope you might be able to answer. And I hope that you remember those five things: God, the Bible, mankind, Jesus, and eternity. I want to finish with, I said I'm going to start with the ugly and finish with the, sorry, yes, the ugly and finish with the beautiful. This is an international model. So we start with someone who's had a very rough life, who's come to know Jesus in recent months. This is someone who is very beautiful and has also come to know Jesus. Her name is Kathy Ireland. Pray. Father, there are some here today and perhaps their lives are in a place where they know nothing but misery. Perhaps there are some here today and their lives are so broken, so empty and dry that they don't know how they could live another day. And I just want to tell you right now, Jesus Christ can save you. He can fill you up. He can put love in your heart. He can be the friend that sticks closer than any other. Jesus Christ is the one you are looking for. If you'd like to know Jesus, can I lead you in a prayer that says, Jesus, I'm sorry for what I've done. Please come into my heart. I want to live for you. Save my soul, I pray. And Father, I pray for each one of us as believers. This world desperately needs ambassadors for Jesus. People who can represent Jesus well, so that when we hear silly things in the media, out of the mouths of civic leaders,